shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendrick.
I end up feeling badly for the team and for our fans because a 3-2 comeback win would be in that moment giving us a real chance of
877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show, and Jaron Vandersloot retracts his confession. He's going to be joined, we will be joined rather, by Margaret Gray this hour. And that song, Psycho Killer, has a little bit to do with what it is she's going to be talking to us about this hour. Psycho Killer by Talking Heads. Why don't we turn that off so while we still have our... Thank you. 877-876-PHIL for your phone calls. You can visit us online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. And while you're there, pick up a backstage pass. You can watch live streaming video of the show, listen to live streaming audio of the show, as well as a, you know, access to all of our archives. You can be a part of our news feed. You get a quick email. Well, not quick, but you do get a guaranteed email response from me when you email us, all of our backstage pass people. In fact, I've become quite conversant with a few people who are backstage pass members over the months. So it's philhendryshow.com. Check it out. Jaron Vandersloot has declined to give a statement in his court appearance. That is the latest news that we're hearing here, that this young man, he told a judge on Monday that his rights and due process were violated after his arrest in connection with the killing of a Peruvian woman. The judge will decide on the legality of Vandersloot's incarceration on Wednesday, according to his attorney. If the ruling is unfavorable to Vandersloot, he is prepared to appeal to the highest court. So he says that his rights under Peruvian law were violated. While in front of the judge, however, Vandersloot declined to give a formal statement on the facts of the case. The reason he gave was the ongoing motion for habeas corpus, which he hopes will nullify the statements he gave to police that led to his imprisonment. So it's a very, very interesting story. And so what we have here is this guy who, first of all, gave a statement to police on the killing of this girl. He's now retracting it. And joining us is Margaret Gray, who's going to be in Lima, Peru, to cover this thing. Margaret, what do you think?
Well, it is. It's a very, very interesting case. So there's no question about it. I am looking forward to going to Lima. I'm looking forward to hearing both sides of this case because, there, as we all know, there are two sides to every story. But I have to say, I don't know if the Peruvian authorities really know what they're up against here. Jaron Vandersloot obviously holds quite an attraction for women. I think we would be very, very wrong in assuming that he didn't. We all know that this was a young man who got around in Aruba. Whether or not he was responsible for Natalie Holloway's death, I don't know, but we do know that he was with young women there, as he was in Peru. He recently made the statement to the judge that he wanted to see his mother. He wanted to be with his mother. My feeling when I hear that is this. He's a young man who is looking for, or at least trying to put forward, the image of a young man looking for protection from his mother, or protection from females. And herein may lay the pathology of Jaron Vandersloot, which is as follows. He's comfortable with women. He feels protected by women. He feels good in their company. He feels that he can relax in their company. And that may threaten some people. But I've got to tell you something, Phil. Women are a real, if I can use the word, they're a real sucker for this kind of guy. And I am concerned that we're going to have a lot of women. We're going to have a lot of groupies.
We're going to have all these groupies like Richard Ramirez had?
Like Richard Ramirez had. We're going to have a lot of these individuals who are enamored of him, who want to protect him. He is very handsome. There's no question about it. I think he's attractive to all kinds of women. There's an innocence about him. It takes quite a bit, I think, of presence of mind to resist a man like Jaron Vandersloot. And I know that when I say these things, there's a lot of men out there, and perhaps yourself, Bill, rolling your eyes a little bit.
Well, absolutely. Especially women who know what this guy has done, or what he's alleged to have done, and which I personally feel he has done, which is committed two murders. What about that? What about women who know that this is a man accused of, and many women who feel the way I do, not only is he accused, but he's guilty of committing these murders?
It's a little different for women, Phil. We can know that a man is a killer. We can know in our hearts that a man is a murderer. But understand that one of the reasons why we are attracted to men is for that very reason. There is an animal strength.
A murderer? You're talking about somebody that took lives?
No, I'm not excusing it. I'm saying, yeah, murder is bad, but to commit a murder, you will admit, takes a level of violence that some women do find very attractive. It's very primal, and it's very exciting. And I don't, personally, as a journalist, as a mother, and as a wife, I am not susceptible to this. But I see so many women that are, women my age and older even, young women. Jeroen van der Sloot, Phil, is going to have his fair share of admirers at this trial. He's going to have his fair share of groupies at this trial. It is a very disturbing thing, and yet it's exciting. I can't...
Well, let me ask you something. Are you excited? But now, hear me out, okay?
No, not at all.
No, just hear me out. Because when I'm listening to you saying Jeroen van der Sloot, I can understand the attraction. I can understand why women feel this way about him. He's very exciting. You know, I'm not saying that you find him exciting.
No, not at all. I'm saying to you, Phil, very, very much the opposite. I'm saying I get it. Am I susceptible to it? No, because I'm a journalist. Would I find myself surrendering to that kind of thing? No, because I am a journalist, because I've been around the block a few times, Phil. Do I see the attraction? Yes, I do. Do I understand why some women are going to lose their minds over this young man, this young, exciting, terribly exciting and very dangerous young man? Yes, I do. Do I understand, for instance, Phil, why it is, and I can make this prediction right now, that women will fly from the United States of America, women who have never met this man, to be at his side during this trial, to sit behind him? Do I understand why they're going to do that? Yes. Do I understand why it is Natalie Holloway will be forgotten very rapidly, and the allure of this man and his story and what he's been through, and the abuse that he's taken? Do I understand why that will become more interesting? Yes, I do.
Natalie Holloway will be forgotten.
I think on some level, yes.
And he will become more interesting. And what about this young girl in Peru?
What is her name, Phil?
Who's that?
The young lady in Peru. Who? What's the name of the young lady that was killed?
It's not fair. Her name is Stephanie Flores.
Yeah, thank you, Jason Rance, for putting it up on the screen.
I knew what her name was. It was Stephanie Flores.
No, but he put it up on the screen, didn't he?
He put it on the screen after I thought of it.
So if we're going to have an interview, I would really appreciate your honesty. Are you saying that you knew her name?
I did know her name. I had to think. And then, yes, he put it on the screen, but I already knew her name.
Would you consider it rude if I said to you that I don't believe you, that I think you're lying, and I...
Yes, I would consider that rude. Yes, I would.
And the reason why I'm saying that is not because you're a bad man, but because you have a radio show and credibility with your audience. But I think you are a liar.
I'm not a liar, and I'm not lying, Ms. Gray. Her name is Stephanie Flores.
All right, well, then let's say this. You are one of a handful of people who know that girl's name. Most people know Jeroen van der Sloot's name. All of those people that claim not to like him know him, know his name. Do they know the names of his victims? No, they don't. Do they remember the name of that little girl from Alabama? No, they don't. student.
Oh, come on. Natalie Holloway's name has been repeated in the press. Her name, the plight of her family. Her name is very, very well known and will be forever linked to this man. And everyone believes he knows where she is, or he knows where he disposed of her, like she was a sack of garbage, if you can even fathom a human being treating another human being that way. No, people remember her name very, very well.
Bill, I submit to you that by the end of this trial, people will have forgotten Natalie, and they will be thinking of Jaron Vandersloot. He's compelling. He's dangerous. I hate him, but I love him. That is what most women are going to experience. Do I like it? No. Do I look down on women like that? Yes, I do. Do I understand them as if they are with a disease? Yes, I do. Do I feel superior to them? Yes, I do. But I feel superior to them the way a nurse feels superior to a leprosy patient. I feel superior to them the way a nurse or a doctor might feel superior to a syphilitic. In other words, I am there for them. Am I healthier? Yes, I am. Can I go out and live a life and a syphilitic can't? Yes. Do I...
All right, I get it already. You're somehow you're lucky that you're not sick.
That's lucky. So I feel superior, and yet I am not superior.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. It's a bizarre conversation we're having here about Jaron Vandersloot. And Mr. Vandersloot, as you know, is accused of murder in at least one case. He is retracted. And Margaret Gray is a journalist, writes A Little Bird Told Me, which is a newspaper column. She believes that Jaron Vandersloot is such an attractive man, such an exciting man. He is, obviously, he holds a great deal of attraction for women, that he is increasingly going to attract women, and his sexual nature and his sexual attraction for women and his charm and his personality will eventually distract a lot of women from this trial to the point where they're going to forget Natalie Holloway's name and Stephanie Flores' name. Your call's coming up next for Margaret Gray, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk about the Jaron Vandersloot case. As you know, he has now retracted his confession. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I didn't know that he retracted his confession. That part's a new one.
Phil Hendry.
Oh. Absolutely.
877-876-PHIL. Margaret Gray joining us here. 877-876-PHIL. As we talk about the Jaron Vandersloot case, you're talking about this guy having a great deal of attraction for women. Women will be attracted to him, so they're going to be down there. They're going to be groupieing. They're going to. He's going to have the sympathies of women in the press. Obviously, he's already. He's accused of murdering two women, but you don't seem to think that that matters.
But it doesn't matter. It's that he is so... Look at the man. He has money. He is able to travel wherever he wants to travel. He obviously has the ability to pick up women at will. He had such magnetism that this young girl that he is alleged to have murdered, this Stephanie Flores, someone said she was a bisexual or something. I don't know. He is a man who loves his mother and wants to be with his mother. Women are suckers for that, Phil. And on top of everything else, there is another consideration. This man could very well gain the attention of women who have some idea that they want to somehow break him out. And what do I mean by that? I mean...
Bust him out of custody.
Break him out of custody, yes. Whether it is while he is in prison, whether it is while he is in police custody, I don't know. But I think you're dealing with a man whose attraction and magnetism for women is such that you're going to have a lot of American women making asses out of themselves trying to break a double murderer out of prison. And I pray to God that it doesn't. Whoever does it, she's not an American, because God knows what that will do for the image of our country. But this is what we're dealing with, Bill. And when I get to Lima, I'll know more. But I'm telling you, it is a. He's exciting. There's no question about it.
You know, that's the thing. You're saying he's exciting, but he's not. You're saying that he's, there's no question about it. You, on the other hand, are not susceptible to this. How many women, and when you say that they're going to bust him out, you're talking about some kind of a security breach.
Absolutely. There's no question in my mind that there is an issue with security when it comes to Joran van der Sloot, insofar as he is attractive to women. A magnetism that is the magnetism of an animal, of a killing animal. Why is it still that Ted Bundy attracted women? Why is it still that Jack the Ripper attracted women? Why is it that Richard Ramirez attracted women? I'll tell you why. When you look into the eyes of one of these killers, you're looking into the eyes of a jungle cat. There's something very alluring about that. I'm looking at the deers right now. There is Joran van der Sloot. He looks as if he is a jungle cat in captivity. What do you think when you see one of those?
Oh, come on. I think the comparison is absolutely asinine.
No, what do you think when you see a jungle cat in captivity?
I feel bad for it. I also saw some of this footage.
You feel bad for it, and you want to release it, and you don't like the humans that have put it there.
I think that what you are talking about here is absurd. I don't think you're going to find that much. I don't think you're going to find that level of. Wait a minute. What do we got here? What is it? What is this?
That is a psycho killer.
I don't want psycho killing. You want psycho killer. Is that it?
Well, I don't need it right now.
She doesn't want it right now, bud, okay?
All right, sorry.
What? But you do want it at some point?
Well, I wanted to make my point, and then we can lead into this. What I'm saying is the following thing. This man, Joran van der Sloot, he's terribly exciting. He is a man who... A woman can walk up to a Joran van der Sloot, look at him, and say, I think you are the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life, as she's taking her underwear off. Do you understand what I'm saying, Phil?
No, I don't understand that. I don't understand that.
You understand how terribly exciting a man has to be for a woman to say to him, oh, my God, you disgust me, and all the while he's laughing. I had a man do that to me once. I almost married him. He was an actor. And he was the most disgusting man I ever met in my life, the things he said. And yet, there I was in his apartment telling him how foul I found him. How obnoxious I found him. How much he disgusted me. And yet I wanted to sleep with him. And I did. More than once. I became pregnant by that man. And I'm not going to tell you what happened to the kid, but I was disgusted with that man all the way to the altar.
Okay, so here's Psycho Killer.
Yes. Did I hit the post?
What post?
All the way to the altar. Yeah, there it is. I'm testing. Well, what happened?
What are you doing, bud?
Would you tell that?
How you doing, young man?
Hey, Frank.
Singing? Oh, he's singing again, isn't he?
Yeah, he's singing again.
Frank, go away, will you? Go fall down someplace, huh? Up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. I can't sleep cause my bed's on fire. There's a wet spot in.
Turn that off. What is the wet spot?
Well, that's what I thought the lyrics said.
Yeah, maybe it's the wrong lyrics.
Oh, no, okay.
Look, don't start screwing around, okay? If you wanted to sing the song, sing the song. Don't give me this, there's a wet spot or whatever it is that you guys are talking about. All right, are you ready to play this or not?
Well, I'm ready.
Yeah, well, hold on. I've got to cue it up.
Okay, here it is, yeah. Two, three, one, two. I used to be a dancer, so I have to do the 1, 2, and 1, 2, 3. What did you say?
Okay, well, we're running out of time.
What do you mean you're running out of time? I can't seem to face up to the facts. Screw it.
Will you get out of here, bud, with that? Turn that off. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show, coming back with more news. Something other than Jeron Vandersloot. How about that?
Phil Hendry.
Southwest Airlines to New Zealand.
What do you mean New Zealand? Let me see that. That's my ticket, man. That's New York.
What's... Oh, okay.
How do you get New Zealand out of New York? That's a good one.
Look at the Z, man. What's that mean?
That's got nothing to do with New York. That's some code. Give me that. That's my boarding pass when I went to New York. 877-876-PHIL. Thanks very much to Margaret Gray for her singing. Next time, bud, let me know, okay?
Well, she sent the song along. And a lyric sheet, too. And
what's she sending you the lyrics for?
I don't know. Maybe she wanted me to... Oh, yeah. Maybe she wanted me to sing along with her.
Thousands cheer for champion Lakers during victory parade. Some angry at lack of porta-potties. Well, there was a victory parade. I'm not going to rub this in because we're on in Boston. And we got a great affiliate in Boston and great listeners in Boston. And it's a great town. And, you know, whatever. Lakers won. Okay, good. Anyway, but there was a parade, and, you know, I come from L.A., and I rooted for the Lakers all through my life, and I was very excited to see those guys out there. Although, I will tell you one thing, for Channel 4 and all of you guys that were doing the pre-parade coverage, I know you want to get on the air before anybody else, because that means that if you're on the air, and right now I'm looking at Chuck Henry and Fred Rogan, so those guys were out there this morning.
Yeah, I saw those guys like 8 o'clock in the morning.
So they're working like a 16-hour shift or something. But if you want to get on the air before anybody else so that everyone, you know, when they turn on the TV looking for the Laker parade, they'll look at you guys, that's fine, but you got to have something to say because most of the time they stood around talking to each other. The Lakers were having a meeting or having a few drinks or whatever they were having. And you know that when these guys are on television and they got nothing else to say, they'll generally say something to the other guy like, "What do you got, Chuck?" Thousands of cheering fans paid tribute to the 2010 championship Lakers during a two-mile parade through the streets of downtown Los Angeles. The crowd screamed with excitement as a flatbed float carrying Kobe Bryant, Paul Gasol, Derek Fisher, Ron Artest, and all the Laker players passed by. A number of open-air buses and other vehicles carrying the Laker girls, coaches, and staff were also part of the procession. There were guys waving that you didn't even know.
Yeah, I noticed that. One guy was waving. I don't know who he is. Like 90% of the guy didn't know. Yeah, who are those guys?
I think they're members of the front office. Who knows, you know?
What about, like, Jerry Buss? Is he there?
I don't know. What, did you want to see him?
No.
Jerry Buss is at all of those things. Even he was. Jeannie Buss was there. I know that. Anyway, Bryant, that's Kobe, who's won 5 titles, said this is the best one by far because it was the hardest one to get. He told reporters that he's ready to do it again next year. When next season starts, we'll be ready, that's for sure. Well, we'll see, because I think there's a few free agents. There's also the question whether Jackson's coming back. Jeannie Buss said that she thinks he will, so long as his health holds up. What's with his health, anyway?
He's very frail, yeah.
He's not well. What do you mean he's very frail?
Well, he's old.
Well, how old do you think he is? He's in his 60s, but I mean, he's a big, tall, strapping guy. He looks healthy to me.
I don't know. He looks like he's, you know, put on a little weight.
What's wrong with the guy? Is there something wrong with him?
Yeah, I don't know. It could be. The blood tests aren't back yet.
Oh, get out of here. You guys are fooling around.
I don't know.
The blood tests aren't back yet. Anyway, eager fans began lining up along the two-mile parade route more than 6 hours before the event kicked off, shortly before 11:30 this morning. Many fans criticized the city for not having enough porta-potties available for fans. Now, this was the big thing this morning that was of all the coverage, and there wasn't really all that much. Oh, the Laker parade. There weren't enough porta-potties, so whatever. You know,
I read a thing, Margaret Gray, on a website.
Margaret Gray was on our website with a little bird told me, saying that she had to use an abandoned building. The parade route stretched from Staples Center on Figueroa Street to about 2 miles south toward USC. Here is a little bit of parade coverage stuff. Kobe Bryant talks to reporters after the parade.
This is great. This is great. The fact that we even have a parade is awesome.
Well, yeah, well, right, so thanks a lot. No, here it is.
This is great. This is great. The fact that we even have a parade is awesome. Well, yeah, well, it's a great opportunity for them to kind of see us up close. You know, it's a trip. You know, one girl almost fainted because she saw the machine. It's pretty dope. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a great fence, extremely humbling. You would have thought a kid that grew up in Italy would be here right now.
What? A kid that grew up in Italy?
Yeah, that's where he's from.
Yeah, I know he's from there, but I don't. Anyway, Phil Jackson wasn't at the parade because he was having medical checkups. So there you go. So he must be sick, man.
I told you, the guy's got to be sick. He's going to miss a parade like that. Why would you miss a parade if you're not as sick?
Why would you miss a parade if you're not? Well, all right. So it's a big thing. He was having a series of medical checks. Maybe he's got bad blood pressure. Maybe he's got bad breath. I don't know. But anyway, that was it. And so they didn't have enough cans for enough people to go to the bathroom. 65,000? Officials estimated the parade might attract as many as 2 million fans, but far fewer showed up. 65,000. That's it. How many did they have last year? I thought they had like a million last year. Well, that isn't even a news story then, other than the fact they didn't have enough porta-johns. Get that out of here. Phil Jackson apparently has pain and swelling in his legs since he's undergone two hip replacements since 2006. Yeah, I can get that, man. When you're that big of a guy, when your body is shaped that way, when it's elongated, you know, like there's a pituitary thing happening there, and there are pressures on joints and pressures on parts of the body that perhaps, oh, I don't know, more traditionally configured human being might not suffer. I suppose it's pretty stressful, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, what are you talking about? He's like a freak of nature or something?
He's not a freak of nature, man.
Well, you're saying like his body's all messed up and everything because he's a freak.
I didn't say he's a freak. I said when your body is elongated like that. How many cats do you know that are that big, okay? It's a rare thing to be that tall. And I imagine it does put pressure on certain parts of the body. Anyway, so we hope you're better, Coach. And go Celtics. All right.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, 877-876-PHIL, the 10 worst BP gaffes in the Gulf oil spill. That's right. There have been 10, or at least there have been some bad gaffes that somebody decided to quantify for us. The decision by BP Chief Executive Tony Hayward to spend a day with his family in England on Saturday was perhaps defensible. 2 months into the Gulf oil spill, some Americans might grudgingly admit that even a man charged with solving the worst environmental crisis in U.S. history needed a day here or there to recharge the batteries. I find this entire thing really trippy. I find people defending BP to be bizarre. Just as bizarre as I find any... let's face it. Obama, from the minute he gets up in the morning until the minute he goes to bed at night, there are people in this country finding fault with everything he does. There's not a thing this guy, anything he does that gets publicity. And they'll even go to the extent of defending British Petroleum. Now, I think, and this is just my personal opinion because I'm looking at it straight on, British Petroleum has committed an act of negligence. Poor engineering, poor maintenance, poor application of their craft or trade, whatever you want to call it, that is beyond anything that I've seen in my life. I don't even know whether they ought to be in business anymore after this. That's how bad I think it is. But there are people out there that want to defend them because that means they're taking a shot at Obama, see? And I don't see how the hell that helps anybody. And frankly, I don't think the guy should be taking a day off. I don't think he should be taking a day off with his family. I don't think he should see his family. I think Tony Hayward, the chief executive officer of British Petroleum, shouldn't even be allowed back to England until he solves this problem. I think everybody on the executive board of BP should be living right now in Louisiana. I think they should be in tents on the beach.
You're kidding me, man. That's ridiculous to do that.
What are they going to do?
Just as a statement. You know, everybody talks about perception. Oh, you know, it's a bad, the perception of the state. Oh, wow. How about this, man? The perception of a company engaging in an activity, a technologic activity that their company is charged with, that their company supposedly is good at, that is a high-risk activity that could cause serious problems if it goes wrong. And certainly there's some great benefit if it goes right. It does go wrong on an unprecedented scale. And they're going about life, oh, it's an emergency, but, you know, I still got to get back to England and see my wife and kids. The Gulf of Mexico, there's oil being pumped into the Gulf of Mexico every day at a record-breaking clip. God knows if it'll ever clear up. I don't think this guy should go home. I don't think he should see his wife and kids until this thing at least gets stopped. It's still pumping oil out there into the Gulf. And people, because they want to play politics with this, are saying, give the guy a break. Obama should be held accountable too. And any time that somebody leans on this Hayward jackass, they got to make sure that Obama's getting some heat for it. They got to make sure that Obama is not unscathed. They got to make sure that they, you know, include him in the broad brush of criticism for this particular job. And they're unrealistic. I'll tell you one other thing, just so you know. The people that have been jumping Obama over all kinds of things, this is a fad. This is a fad. This is like wearing the right kind of shoes or wearing the right kind of pants. There are people that just get on the bash Obama thing because they don't want to piss off the wrong people. They want to be in the right crowd. They don't want to be criticized. They don't want to stand out. They don't want to do anything that's going to get them in hot water with anybody. So they just, you know, they go along to get along. And everybody's expected to do that. Everybody's expected to, you know, dislike Obama. Well, I'm sorry. I just don't see his hand, the negative work of Obama in every single problem there is. And this BP thing is disgusting, not so much because the oil is leaking into the Gulf. It's disgusting because the politics they've played with this is a crime in and of itself. So this was written by Mark Sappenfield of the Christian Science Monitor. Number one, who's in charge? On Friday, BP board chairman Carl Henrik Svanberg presented the news that many Americans had long been waiting for. Hayward was being shunted out of his lead role in the Gulf oil spill crisis to be replaced by BP managing director Bob Dudley. Whatever. On Saturday, BP media relations personnel said the chairman of the board was wrong. They said Mr. Svanberg was suggesting that BP was merely beginning a long-planned and gradual transition of authority. Number two, the small people crack. Number three, the I want my life back crack. Number four, on May 18th, the month after the blowout, Hayward told the BBC, I think the environmental impact of this disaster is likely to be very, very modest. The Gulf of Mexico is a very big ocean. The amount of volume of oil and disparate we are putting into it is tiny in relation. Number five, a trickle. On June 8th, BP Chief Operating Officer Doug Suttle said the spill should be down to a relative trickle by Monday or Tuesday. According to the best scientific estimates, between 10,000 and 35,000 barrels of oil are still leaking into the Gulf daily. That's 1.5 million gallons daily. Number six, the 5,000 barrels a day crack. Part of the reason for the continued leak is that BP lowballed the flow rate from the well and then refused to try to amend it. For a short time after the blowout, BP estimated the well beneath the deep water horizon was spewing 1,000 barrels of oil a day into the Gulf. That was swiftly changed to 5,000. Last week, scientists suggested the real number could reach as much as 60,000 and no less than 35,000. These guys have lied. Number seven, top kill. The 70% chance, as they call it. The underestimation of the flow rate mirrors the repeated overestimation by BP of its own capabilities. Hayward said that the failed top kill procedure, which would have stopped the oil, had a 60 to 70% chance of working. It failed. Number eight, we've turned the corner. Early on May 17th, BP stuck a siphon into the ruined riser pipe, collecting 1,000 barrels a day, leading Hayward to say, I do feel that we have, for the first time, turned the corner in this challenge. The siphoning effort was abandoned. Number nine, when BP shares prices recently, when their BP shares on the stock market exchange recently plummeted, BP intended to convey the idea that it could handle the cost of the Gulf oil spill. Its statement, however, was obtuse to the point of absurdity. The statement, quote, the company is not aware of any reason which justifies this share price movement. Number 10, waste of money. 6 weeks after the spill began, BP started a $50 million TV ad campaign promising to restore the Gulf. Obama said the money would have been better spent on relief efforts and damage claims. The 10 screw-ups. Coming up, we'll tell you the most popular cards with women. 877-876-PHIL. Phil, man jumps onto truck as dare, then calls 911 when it doesn't stop. Yes, sometimes it's just worth it, man. You know, it's worth it to be just to read a story like this. It's worth it to get out of bed in the morning. What apparently began as an alcohol-fueled prank turned into a pretty Siri ride for a 24-year-old Ohio man. Very early Friday morning, Brandon R. Farmer and a few friends were walking around in Washington Courthouse, Ohio, when they spotted a small semi-truck trailer stopped at a red light. Based on a dare, Farmer jumped onto the rear rail of the vehicle before the driver hit the gas, according to authorities. Farmer indicated that his intent was to ride on the back of the semi-trailer rail until it stopped at the next traffic light in downtown and then to dismount, according to the Fayette County Sheriff Vernon Stanford. Trouble was, the truck didn't stop. Farmer was unaware that the traffic signals of the downtown area were programmed to remain green unless they sensed cross traffic, which on this very early morning, they didn't. The truck driver, of course, unaware he had a passenger, never slowed as he made his way to the town of Sabina at about 55 miles an hour. This is great. Holding on for dear life, Farmer managed to dig out his cell phone and call 911. Let's listen to this dumbass as he calls 911.
Sheriff's 911, what's your emergency?
My emergency, I'm on the back of a moving semi. I jumped on because he was at a red light and he took off. It was kind of a joke. But now I'm all the way on 22, almost in Sabina, and I'm on the back of the semi and he has no idea that I'm on the back of it. I was joking around, you know, it was stupid, but I'm scared of my life right now.
What's the last road that you've crossed?
So we're on 22 heading towards Wilmington.
I understand. Give me a landmark or a road that you've passed.
There's no, we have passed, like, Carter Lumber, you know, heading towards, like, Sabina. We're almost in Sabina from Washington Courthouse, and I'm holding on for dear life right now. It's my dumbass fault, but honestly, I've been trying to...
He's still... Sounds like the line went dead, man.
And what happened?
Well, what happened was an alert was immediately put out. And you heard what the guy said. It was kind of a joke. It's my dumbass fault. At 3:40 in the morning, 3:40 a.m., an officer in Sabina, this is in Ohio, saw the semi coming into the village with Farmer still hanging on the hanging on the back and made a traffic stop on the truck. Farmer had held on for about 17 miles. Uninjured, he was taken by Sabina police to the county line where he was picked up by the Fayette County Sheriff's Office. When deputies talked to Farmer, it was determined that he was under the influence of alcohol. Farmer was arrested and charged with disorderly conduct. He's scheduled to appear in court for arraignment on June the 28th. So that's just another one of those, you know.
Well, I don't understand what a guy was jumping on.
What do you mean you don't understand what he jumped on?
Yeah, what do you mean a rail?
Very early morning, Brandon Farmer said a few friends were walking around in Washington Court, whatever the hell that is, some town in Ohio, when they spotted a semi-truck trailer stopped at a red light. Based on a dare, they jumped on the rear rail of the vehicle before the driver hit the gas. They were drunk, you know.
What's the rear rail?
It's probably where the rear, you know, a tractor trailer is the trailer. Maybe it was a tractor. I don't know if the guy had a trailer attached or not. The rear rail, yeah, it was a semi-truck. Oh, semi-truck and a trailer. I don't know. The railing behind the actual cab of the truck where the trailer... What do you
care, man? I wanted to be, you know, specific.
Forget about being specific. So they're drunk and they got out. It's kind of like this is a, you know, it used to be you hopped a boxcar. This guy just jumped on the back of the truck. So off they went, and it's worth it to hear it again. This is the best one I've heard since that the pot brownie one. One of these days we'll have to bust that one out. You know that marijuana one where the guy is, things are slowing down really, 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 really slow? I don't even know if we still have that or not. Yeah, here it is. Remember this?
Cameron Heights emergency.
Yeah, can you please send rescue? I think I'm having an overdose at a school with my wife. Okay, you and your wife?
Yes.
Overdose of what?
Marijuana. Please come. I think we're dying. Time is going by really, 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 really slow.
Okay, but then...
Sheriff's 911, what's your emergency?
My emergency, I'm on the back of a moving semi. I jumped on because he was at a red light, and he took off. It was kind of a joke. But now I'm all the way on 22, almost in Sabina, and I'm on the back of the semi, and he has no idea that I'm on the back of it. I was joking around. You know, it was stupid, but I'm scared
what's
of my life right
what's
now.
What's the last road that you've crossed?
So we're on 22 heading towards Wilmington.
I understand. Give me a landmark or a road that you've passed.
There's no, we have passed, like, Carter Lumber, you know, heading towards, like, Sabina. We're almost in Sabina from Washington Courthouse, and I'm holding on for dear life right now. It's my dumbass fault, but honestly, I've been trying to...
So that's it, man. Maybe he didn't fall off. They finally got him, and that was it. 877-876-PHIL. Phil Hendry.